On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to talk about the World Series. That's right. World Series Game 3 was kind of a stinker. The Dodgers are up 3-0, one win away from a sweep. We'll take your hand and walk you through all the mundane. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that likes it when its back is up against the wall. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We're going to take this podcast one day at a time.
Yes, as Aaron Boone said in his post-game, they're just trying to get one win. You cannot come back from 3-0 in one night. It will start with Luis Gil on Tuesday, but we are going to recap Game 3 first. I am here in New York City in the very same apartment as my dear friend Jake Mintz. We are recording this late on Monday evening after the Dodgers defeated the New York Yankees 4-2. And this is going to be a bit of a briefer episode, partially because it's almost 2 a.m. local and partially because it was pretty straightforward. The Dodgers look like the better baseball team, and they are now one win away from the World Series victory that they have craved since everyone called their 2020 championship a Mickey Mouse title. Jake, where would you like to begin with this here Game 3 recap?
I would like to begin at the end of Game 2. The previously on segment at the beginning of this episode is Shohei Ohtani sliding into second base and clutching his shoulder. The best baseball player in the National League this season tried to steal and didn't, and may have lost more than a base runner. He jetted out of the ball yard before anyone could talk to him after Game 2, which we talked about on last week's last podcast. Shows up to the workout before Game 3. We were not there. And then all the news indicated that Ohtani was going to play, that he was feeling good enough to play. We got to the yard today on Tuesday. He was in the lineup. Now, how healthy was Ohtani? How comfortable was Ohtani? That was all unclear. And we get a very bizarre moment when we see Ohtani for like the first two times he's involved in this game. One is he runs out for warmups and he's got this black strap item around his shoulder. His left shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder. And a bunch of people just assume it's a sling and start tweeting that it's a sling. Let me tell you something about slings. It's not what slings are, right? Slings are to keep something immobilized completely. One does not remove an arm from a sling and then proceed to mobilize the hell out of it. What Ohtani was wearing was a heating slash pressure device that was warming his arm up for participation. Immobilizing it completely is like icing your leg before you run a marathon. It's just not a thing.
That said, when we get to the second part of the what is Shohei going to look like, which is he draws a four-pitch walk to start the game from Clark Schmidt. And when he gets on first base and starts taking his lead and starts ready to go to second, he is holding his left arm and shoulder in a way that you kind of would if you were wearing a sling.
So he's grabbing his collar of his uniform with his left arm in a way that like a quarterback would hold his pads on the sideline, right? Except he's doing it with one arm. And he's doing this as he's taking a lead off of first base. He's doing this as he runs to second on a foul ball. Like, he's pumping his right arm and holding his left arm. And it's clear that that is how he is choosing to stay comfortable. And that was very weird to see. He did not look great tonight. His bat speed numbers were the same as they've always been, faster than average. So I believe he was swinging slightly differently, right? Like, he was doing a one-handed finish, I believe, which
no,
he doesn't always do.
I think we've seen both. He had some two-handed finishes. I mean, he definitely, okay. Again, it looked a little bit off, but the bat speed was there. I know, you know, he obviously draws that four-pitch walk, but other than that, he struck out and didn't look great. And other than that, again, he clearly didn't look like himself, but he was in there.
Oh, so that's plot point one. Ohtani, physically fine enough to play, less than himself. We now rewind to the most important pregame news that we got. And that pregame news is that Fat Joe doesn't have it anymore. For this bi-coastal fall classic, MLB trotted out two rappers very intertwined with their respective cities. Ice Cube performed out in Los Angeles, and Fat Joe performed here in New York. Fat Joe from the Bronx. And it's tough, right? Because Ice Cube is more famous than Fat Joe by a significant amount. And Ice Cube is also an actor. And Ice Cube understood the assignment of what Ice Cube was supposed to do. And we didn't talk about this on last episode, but the Ice Cube performance of him walking out from center field and slowly trotting towards home plate, like as he performed Today Was a Good Day, was the second coolest moment of the World Series behind Freddie Freeman's walk-off.
I mean, it was, I think the biggest thing about that, and I'm not going to pretend to be a Fat Joe expert, so if this is disrespectful to his status in the Bronx, forgive me. To me, it's as simple as everybody in the stadium knew all the words to It Was a Good Day in LA, and that was simply not the case for Fat Joe's performance. And that in and of itself made it less hype because most people were just watching him and being like, all right, like, here to see the Yankees in the World Series. Like, let's do that, maybe. And then, you know, he got off the mound and the Freddie Freeman homered and the Yankees were losing, you know, 7 minutes into the game.
So maybe I'm unspooling this too far. The West Coast energy is a calm confidence, is a relaxed confidence. It is, we are so much better than you and we know it, so why would we stress? Whereas the East Coast confidence is more swaggering. It is more in your face. It is more dominating. And because, in part, the Yankees were down 2-0, that energy just did not come out of Fat Joe's performance. And I'm not here, I'm not going to tell you that Fat Joe, looking more like lethargic Joseph, was the reason the Yankees, you know, napped through this game. Obviously not. It set quite an energy in the stadium. It was flawed. It was paced poorly, and it didn't inspire confidence, kind of like the 2024 Yankees. So now we will go back to the game action. We're in the first inning. That Shohei Ohtani fellow gripping his collar. Well, he doesn't need to run very fast because the third batter of the game, Fredward Freeman, hits another home run, a 2-run shot to put the Dodgers up 2-0. His third straight game this World Series with a homer, his fifth straight World Series game with a homer, going back to 2021 with the Braves, tying George Springer's all-time mark.
Yeah, and Freddie is some kind of locked in right now. You know, all three of his home runs have come on inside pitches, and he spoke after the game about how he had never faced Clark Schmidt before, but Schmidt kind of showed him all of his stuff. He said afterwards, he's like, he showed me all three pitches. He didn't throw the sinker to him, but whatever. He saw enough. And the second cutter that he threw for that fourth pitch was not where Schmidt wanted it. I think you could tell Trevino was setting up outside. And that comes up and in basically to the exact same spot that he took Rodon deep in game two. And just, you know, in a blink, obviously, to right field at Yankee Stadium, this one's going to go. And it was, I believe it was a home run in 20 of 30 parks. But it was a pretty obvious no doubter there. And that, that was, again, 7 minutes into the game and it was 2-0 Dodgers.
And so before the Yankees could even hit, they were down. And before the Yankee fans could even complete the roll call, for those of you who don't know, the bleacher creatures who sit out in right field before every Yankee game do roll call, where they chant and serenade the name of every single player out on the diamond besides the pitcher and the catcher. It is the iconic Derek Jeter. And they do that for every player, and the player acknowledges them and they wave and they keep going down the line, right? The Ohtani walk happened so quickly that he was on first base before the bleacher creatures got to Volpe at shortstop, and they still had to do Jazz at third. So that was very quick. And then the homer was quick. So when like Glaber walks up to start the game in the bottom of the half inning, it's like already vibes are already shot. And from there, the game felt kind of not over, but it was pretty imposing. Mookie, notches an RBI single in the third inning to put it up 3-0. They pull Clark Schmidt with two outs in the third. And it's like, wow, they really are going to ask the Yankee bullpen to get, what is it, 18 outs? Get 18 outs?
Yeah, 19 outs.
19 outs?
Yeah.
And they did. And hey, they did. You know, they actually did a good job.
Yeah, the Yankees bullpen, I guess we saw seven more pitchers. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we saw everybody. We saw Leiter. We saw Cortez, Cousins, Hill, Holmes, Canely, Weaver. And they only allowed three more hits and one more run. But because the Yankees offense is just so bad right now, it didn't really feel like they had much of a chance. But let's hit just a couple of the other main moments of this game.
Just quickly on Clark Schmidt, and then we'll take a quick break. So Schmidt just didn't have the good stuff tonight. I mean, his command was all over the place. For him, he is cutter, sweeper, knuckle curve, sinker. Those are just four. And when he gets the cutter in on the hands of left-handed hitters, he can have success. He did not do that. And it was best exemplified in that pitch against Freeman. He walked four batters before he was pulled. So he got he had four walks and eight outs, which is not a rate that you're looking for. And so that just put the Yankees on the back foot. And I know the bullpen held in there and did a really good job. But Schmidt, I mean, it's the second straight game here that the starting pitcher for the Yankees is not very good. And for, you know, contrast, we haven't said his name yet. Walker Buehler, through the first handful of innings, looks fantastic. In his most recent outing against the Mets in game four of the NLCS, he was as good as we've seen him in a long time. He got like the most swing and misses he's gotten in a long time. And it looked like a very similar Walker Buehler tonight, where the fastball had hop, it had life, and he was locating the secondaries where he needed to. Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will dive into the key moment of the game. And I will tell you why sending Giancarlo Stanton was the right move.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's keep this Game 3 recap going. One moment I just want to hit on before we get to Giancarlo Stanton trying to score from second base is the end of Clark Schmidt's outing against Mookie and Mookie's second at bat. Just because Mookie, who, you know, seven pitch at bat in the first inning, didn't swing and miss once, saw all of his pitches. And then at the top of the third, Tommy Edman, leadoff walk, Otani grounds out, and then Mookie, it's a nine pitch battle. And again, Schmidt's just throwing everything. And it's just one of those things, like this is one, like this Mookie cannot hit the ball as hard as, you know, some of his famous teammates, but he is still one of the hardest guys to strike out in the league. And in a game like this, where if you could get, this is part of why it makes it even easier to get Schmidt out of there as early as they did. And I know they didn't ultimately tack on that many, but this third run ends up being, you know, the difference, as we know, the Yankees score later. And this bloop to right where maybe another right fielder gets it. I don't know. I mean, it would have been a long run for Soto, but just a pain in the ass at bat for Mookie Betts and a reminder that he's having an outstanding postseason. I mean, I think his OPS this month is like 980, and he's not going to win, you know, World Series MVP because of Freddie Freeman, and he did win LCS MVP, but he's been awesome this month, and, you know, some good defensive plays as well that we probably aren't going to touch on, but Mookie, really big game from him. But let's go to the bottom of the fourth. So Judge flies out. He strikes out earlier. We'll talk about Judge more later. Stanton doubles to left. And Jazz follows with a line drive to right. Mookie makes a nice diving catch. Kind of had a bad read on it, but had the athleticism to kind of recover and dive and kind of a gutsy play from Mookie there after misjudging it. You know, he could have just played it simply. And then at that point, maybe Giancarlo probably isn't scoring unless it really gets past him. But then it brings up Volpe with two outs. And what happens next, Jake Mintz?
So I've been the Volpe defender this week. I think he's having like much better at bats and putting bat on ball and getting a little unlucky with his batted ball results. And here he knocks a single into left field. And Giancarlo Stanton is on second base. And context here is important. Giancarlo Stanton is a fascinating physical being right now. His top half still works the way it always has. His bat speed, because we can measure this now, is still the fastest in the world, right? No one who plays baseball professionally can swing harder than this guy. And so even though he turns 35 next week, he has not declined in that specific way. An important skill to not decline it. However, below the waist, make haste, because boy, oh boy, is he a tough watch. And at many points this year, we get this like once a month with Stanton. There's a play where he doesn't look like he's running hard, and he's out in a way that no other player would be out on that play. And it's really just sad, because this guy used to be an unbelievable athlete with decent speed. And now, because he's had so many lower body injuries, he just can't move quickly. So he's on second. Volpe strings this single to left. And the second it touches grass, I grabbed your arm. Like, we knew what was coming. Because Giancarlo Stanton thumps around third, chugs towards home. Left fielder Teoscar Hernandez scoops up the ball, fires it to the catcher. Man and ball meet at home. A bang bang play. Giancarlo slides right into the mitt. He is out unequivocally, depressingly. He then flips on his back like a dying bug almost. And the whole crowd just, if you've never heard 47,000 people groan in unison, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, you know, our seat in the press box is a little bit over to kind of the third base side. And so watching Stanton hit third right around the time that Teoscar got the ball. Now, I will say he's probably safe if the throw isn't perfect. I mean, it was a perfect throw.
That's my point here. It is so easy to be like, Giancarlo Stanton was out. It was a bad send, right? Because he is slow as molasses, and it ended with an out. But when the play is that close, it's a good send for me. End of story. Especially because of how bad the rest of the Yankee lineup has been. If you had Juan Soto on deck, bad send. Anthony Rizzo's bat speed looks like he's swinging a lead pipe. Okay? I understand he singled later in this game. This is their chance to score a run, to chip away, to get back into this ballgame, to change the energy. And just because the result was bad doesn't mean that the process of Luis Rojas, the third base coach, sending him was bad. Because like you said, it's a perfect throw and it's really close. If Stanton slides in head first, which he like maybe can't, you know, he hasn't. I haven't, can't picture that. He's probably safe, right? Like, it's a close enough play where if the ball is 2 feet up the first baseline, Stanton is safe.
Think about if he's safe from like a moment standpoint, right? Giancarlo scoring there. You know, again, it's like, does that suddenly make the Yankees offense better and they're energized and they suddenly score 15 runs? No. But like, that could have been something, because we have seen moments in this postseason recently where Stanton is thrown out by 10 feet, and it's like, what? I believe it did happen earlier this postseason once, where you're thinking like, it looks terrible. But this did end up being a close play, and to your point,
yeah,
they're trying to get runs any way they can, and as deflating as that was, you could sort of understand why they were trying to push it there.
I think it's worth the risk. Still, when he's out, it is deflating. Deflating. That's the game. I mean, that's the ball game, right? The game either ends when Fat Joe opens his mouth, Freddie Freeman thumps one to right, or Giancarlo Stanton is rolling around on his back. That's it. The rest of it, to me, was pretty much irrelevant. Buehler ends up going 5 innings. Kike tacks on an RBI single in the 6th. The Yankees have 2 base runners on in both the 6th and the 7th, but it never feels like they're really ever going to break through. Verdugo knocks a 2-run homer with 2 outs in the bottom of the 9th. That was a 2-run homer?
Sure was.
Oh, I wrote 4-1 on my final score.
Did you think it was 4-1? No, Rizzo.
I just
Rizzo had walked. Rizzo had walked after Volpe struck out against Kopech. So I mentioned, you know, the Yankees used eight pitchers because Schmidt's outing was short. And the Dodgers, even with Buehler going five, still used six more pitchers. So this is before the bullpen game they have scheduled in game four. Luis Gil, who's, you know, who's to say. But until Kopech kind of coughs it up late, you know, Brusdar, Vesia, Hudson, Bonda, Brazier, you know, they all got the job done again. And obviously, Buehler was great. Now, there were a couple other moments in this game that sort of felt important. But on the whole, I mean, this was just, again, like the Dodgers didn't, both teams had five hits. The Dodgers walked six more times, and that kind of created traffic and forced Boone to kind of keep going to a few more of his relievers. But at the end of the day, it certainly didn't feel close. Obviously, it was 4-0 for almost the entire game. Verdugo, you know, pops a short porch homer late. But it was, again, sure, they had some life in the ninth, just like they did in game two. So, and you can look at the scores and be like, oh, the Yankees are in it. They're just a few swings. It's like, no, they look so much worse. They have so many more players playing poorly, and the Dodgers have so many more players playing well. And credit for the Yankees pitchers, for especially the bullpen, for keeping them in these games. But clearly, that's not getting them to a point where they can win. And now you're down 3-0, and we don't have to explain what that means. But you know, now you're just in a situation where when you think about what it takes, it's like you can keep talking about the process all you want, and say, oh, they're so close. Oh, if they had this, it's no. You're down 3-0, and it looks like you're playing like you're down 3-0. It looks like they're down 3-0. If I didn't see any of the score wins, you showed me most of that, I'd be like, okay, that team's, they're down 3-0. It's very easy to tell when you watch the at-bats and you just watch the production. So that's game three.
I want to give anything else
from the game that we need to say? Yeah.
Yeah, I want to give a little more love to Walker Buehler.
Sure.
So Walker Buehler had a really fascinating year. You know, got Tommy John in 2022. Before that, he's just straight up one of the best pitchers in baseball. Finishes fourth in the Cy Young in 2021. He is fourth in wins above replacement from 2018 to 2021 behind DeGrom, Verlander, and Scherzer. Like, this is one of the best pitchers on the planet. And he gets Tommy John, and it doesn't go perfectly on his rehab. He was so mediocre all season long and really only ended up starting a postseason game for the Dodgers because of all the injuries they had, right? Here you go. Here's a scenario. Tyler Glasnow and Gavin Stone were both in the Dodgers rotation all season long, mostly. And if I am correct, I think they finished 1-2 in innings pitched for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. They're the only two pitchers, Stone and Glasnow, the only two pitchers over 100 innings for the Dodgers. If both of them stay healthy, Walker Buehler does not get a postseason start. It is Glasnow, Stone, Yamamoto, and Flaherty. That is the rotation. Buehler is not in the mix. He maybe is on the roster as a long man, but that's it. But because of those injuries, he's thrust into the third starter role, and he has performed, save for one bad outing, incredibly well, and deserves a lot of credit for how he has picked his season back up. And as somebody who's going into free agency with a very uncertain future, I'm fascinated to see how he lands. Based upon how this series is going, feels like it'll be the last start of his season. Mm. And he ended it pretty freaking well. So I just want to give a big tip of the cap to Walker Buehler. When we previewed the World Series, I said that the Yankees had a superior rotation. Okay. Now, I do think that the gap between these two rotations is closer than we've seen. And I think if the Yankees' arms got to face their own lineup and the Dodgers' arms got to face their own lineup, it would be closer than this. Okay. I think that's fair. However, the Dodger pitching has been stellar, the starting pitching, and deserves a whole lot of love for it.
Yeah. No, 100%. And Buehler wasn't as, you know, nasty as, like, the stuff didn't look as visually outstanding as it did against the Mets, but he was more efficient. He was more in the zone. He gets through five scoreless. And I mean, man, if that's his last start as a Dodger, hell of a way to go out, right? Maybe he does end up coming back. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns with him, but this is a situation where he probably is making himself some money late here. I mean, when you consider what he did in the regular season, he didn't have too many starts like this. He really didn't. And now he's done it in back-to-back games in the CS and the World Series. So very impressive. Dodgers win 4-2. Let's take another break. And when we return, we will look ahead to Game 4 on Tuesday and some other big picture thoughts about the Yankees season on the line and the Dodgers one win away from a World Series championship. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Game 4. Let's get excited about it, even though it's hard to, except if you're a Dodger fan or a Red Sox fan. Luis Gil going for the Yankees against Jonathan Holstaff, MT Penn, a la Diarmas, Bob all the fellers. It is a bullpen game for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I think it is easy to see the words bullpen game and be like, well, that's not going to work. That's a bad starter. Guess what? I'd rather have this gaggle amalgamation of Dodger relievers than Luis Gil tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I would, because this Dodger group, except for when Landon Knack, you know, pooped his pants in game two of the NLCS, it's worked really freaking well. So the Dodgers we'll get bulk at the beginning from Ben Kasparius and friend of the show, Brent Honeywell, maybe. And then they'll go from there and they'll piece it together. And guess what? They got a lot of really good arms. And Luis Gil, who's going to be in the running for Rookie of the Year, is not a great matchup for the Dodgers because Luis Gil does not throw a lot of strikes. He relies on chase outside of the zone, similar in some ways to Carlos Rodon. Now, Carlos was in the zone against LA. Like, that wasn't the issue. He didn't walk the farm against them, right? But that was the kind of the prediction ahead of time that can this pitcher who relies on chase get a team who doesn't chase to chase? And it ended up the Dodgers just pounced on him when he was in the zone. With Gil, I think it's an even bigger deal. So I'm really interested to see how that works tomorrow night, especially, in game four, especially because we just saw Clark Schmidt walk four dudes and, you know, two in a and change. So it's like, yeah, the Dodgers are going to take their walks and they'll bleed you out that way. And so even though it's easy to see like this matchup is imbalanced on paper, I do think the Dodgers have the pitching advantage.
Yeah. And at this point, why are we, especially considering the state of the Yankees offense, I'm done looking at a bullpen game being like, oh, this might not work. And it might not, right? Because that is the nature of the bullpen game, is when you have that many different guys going. I mean, we even saw it tonight, right? We saw it here in game three where they were pretty much flawless. And then Michael Kopech comes in and gives up a home run to Alex Verdugo. That's possible, you know, in game four. But ultimately, the Dodgers offense has certainly done more than enough to keep them ahead and keep them in comfortable position. We saw all of the Dodgers relievers, except for Blake Treinen, in terms of, like, you know, the one inning guys in game three. We did not see Treinen. Treinen obviously did not look great the first couple games against the Yankees, but he will at least be the most rested. Beyond that, I mean, like you said, Kasparius and Honeywell, they have not announced, as the time we're recording this, they have not announced who will start. Maybe, you know, we've seen Brazier start one of these games. We've seen a couple different versions of this. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways it could go. But to your point, I mean, it's really way more about Luis Gil than anything, because he has really good stuff. And if he can kind of get through it, he was okay against Cleveland. Wasn't great. But as we've said about all these guys, everything regarding this series, this isn't Cleveland anymore. And so he just does not have that margin for error. And in a game where they're facing elimination, if he goes out and walks multiple guys in the first, I mean, they're already not feeling great. And the fans tonight, you know, leaving in the eighth inning and like, they're already not feeling awesome. And Gil is the kind of volatile starter where, as we already saw tonight, it could be over pretty fast. So long way to go. Dodgers will have a lot of innings to cover, and it will be a tough challenge for our Fred Brent or Kasparius, you know, at the top here. If they are the ones that have to face Juan Soto, you know, and Judge and Stanton, like, that's not a small thing. But ultimately, I mean, the bottom of this lineup right now, and they're just cruising through. Like, whoever's out there for the Dodgers is just having no problem, save for the shocking Verdugo short porch homer at the end of this one. So that's really where it sits, man. I mean, it's it's been a pretty tough watch for these Yankees on multiple fronts, and the Dodgers are just in a really, really impressive state, and that's without much from Ohtani. Muncy looks awful. Will Smith isn't really doing anything, but doesn't matter. They just have enough other guys putting together quality at-bats and getting on base and giving the Yankees pitchers headaches.
I want to zoom out here. If you're a Dodger fan, you should be freaking amped. Obviously, no freaking duh. Like, you don't need me to tell you that. You're one win away from a World Series. That's awesome. For the rest of us, for the neutral observer, the Yankees going belly up and folding and not giving a series is a massive bummer just because of what this was hyped as. Fairly so. I mean, we hyped this up as a battle of the heavyweights, East Coast, West Coast, Judge Ohtani. And what we seem to have messed up is the enormous imbalance of quality in these two rosters. And I don't want to say that I like feel cheated, but boy, do I wish the series had a little bit more punch to it now that we've gotten this deep into it. Because, okay, if the Yankees come back and win, great. I'll look like an idiot. But this is done. This is over. Like, the Dodgers
are going
to win one of these. If the
Yankees come back and win, people aren't going to be thinking about what Jakeman said. Okay. Like, we're all in the same position right now, which is looking at the series.
To doubt them.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's true in any 3-0, right? So it's like there's I have received very little reason to believe that the Yankees lineup, besides Soto and Stanton, is gonna do anything.
Forget coming back, right? I mean, what did Boone say? We need to get one win. Not since 1970, which is, I believe, 9 or 10 instances ago. This is from Tyler Kepner. Has a World Series started 3-0 and then the team that was down 3-0 even won game 4. So, like, again, we're not even talking about coming back from down 3-0. We're talking about winning this game 4, which is what we just talked about, which isn't feeling great. So no matter what, I mean, this is just what it's looked like. And to your point, big picture, it is disappointing. I think that, you know, when we previewed it, we did say, like, okay, like, the Dodgers, it's a deeper lineup. They do have more guys that we've seen succeed, especially this postseason. And we did point out that, man, the Yankees did have some trouble at times squeaking by Kansas City and Cleveland, even if those series were pretty short. And I think that's just what it's looked like. They just look overwhelmed by the amount of talent and just having to deal with what the Dodgers have. And I think that the Dodgers were a team that ultimately, even with all their injuries, they didn't have too many stretches this year where they looked actively bad the way that I know their pitching did at times, but they really didn't have too many, like, I'm going to fact check myself on this here, but, like, it didn't feel like they had any. I guess July they were 11-13, but other than that, they were, like, at least 5 or 6 games over 500 in every other month. Whereas, like, I mean, the Yankees, and we talked about this with some of these other teams, the Phillies, like, all these other teams look legitimately bad for long stretches. That just really wasn't the case for the Dodgers. And maybe some Dodgers fans were like, oh, no, July was rough. Like, well, I promise you it wasn't as bad as what the Yankees looked like. And ultimately, I think we're just seeing that they just have, it's just too many good players. And credit to them, right? That's the whole point. That's why you go out and keep acquiring MVPs. That's why you sign Teoscar Hernandez in January when no one else wants to give him a chance. That's why you bring in reliever after reliever after reliever and fix guys and, you know, rejuvenate guys and get have the homegrown guys that you love. Like, all these things are working. And that's just what we've seen. It has been a collective, comprehensive effort from the Dodgers in really, really impressive fashion.
And I have to say, particularly on the pitching side, this series has shown the Dodgers' organizational might beyond their wealth. Yeah, they spent the GDP of a small nation on Yamamoto. Okay.
And that works in game 2.
And it worked. Looks freaking awesome, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, what they spent to get Jack Flaherty, right? What they've developed in their bullpen with a bunch of homegrown guys. Ben Kasparius just, like, being on this roster at all is bonkers, right? This is not somebody they thought would be there. And he looks ready and prepared and not overwhelmed. And I think it is cool that even though there are stars, not the backbone, but, like, there is a thread through this team that is the Dodgers being so good at player development, helping them out once crap hit the fan with all the other pitchers that they had. I don't want to do, like, the full praising of the Dodgers though tonight, because like we can do that tomorrow when they win the World Series. And so I think we'll wrap it up there. Yeah. Again, we haven't had a sweep since 2012 when the Tigers got swept by the Giants. It's really hard to come back from. The only team to ever come back from a 3-0 deficit at all. It was a 2004 Red Sox 20 years ago. Maybe the Dodgers will watch the document, or the Yankees will watch the documentary on Netflix tonight.
Seems pretty unlikely, but perhaps. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for staying up late to produce. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed these postseason pods. How many more game recaps will we have? Who's to say? Email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com, BARBcast. We appreciate all the support and hope you've enjoyed these. We will talk to you all very soon.
Yankee hitters are hitting 152, 256, 203 if their names are not Stanton or Stanton.